Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1977, the American economy was in the dumps, and Sheila Lukens was diving in to open a little gourmet takeaway shop on New York's Upper West Side. It was called The Silver Palette, and a few years later, a cookbook of the same name was taking the country by storm. Now, years of happy cooking and eating later, the economy is on the slide again, and she's back with more comfort and joy from the kitchen. This hour, On Point, Silver Palette chef Sheila Lukens and the evolution of America's home-cooked cuisine. Joining me now from New York is Sheila Lukens, chef, cooking teacher, food writer, and co-author of the best-selling 1982 cookbook, The Silver Palette, as well as the New Basics cookbook and Celebrate. She's food editor at Parade Magazine. Her new cookbook is called 10, All the Foods We Love and 10 Recipes for Each. Sheila Lukens, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. You think we can save the economy with this one?
I don't know. Can we eat our way, out of it?
Yeah, let's eat our way out of it or cook our way out of it.
Well, it may be all we can do. I mean, it did make me wonder, Sheila. You've got a long career doing this. And as we were—
I do. 25 years.
That's a long time.
I still look cute, by the way.
We don't doubt it. We'll check it out on Google. you started the first one in 1977. Things really were tough.
That's
New
right.
York was not in fat city. Then you've seen fat times and thin times. Does it change the way people want to cook and eat?
No. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I was just looking at my whole list of recipes. Does it change the way? Yes, it does. If someone was looking at this book the other day and I was giving an interview, they said, Oh my gosh, this could be a health food book. You don't use butter. And I said, only in the baking recipes. I use 2 tablespoons of olive oil to start everything and a tablespoon of butter if I want for flavor.
Butter's gone, butter's
really
out.
But
butter was fully evident in the Silver Palette, as I recall.
That's absolutely right. A couple sticks of butter for everything. And boy, it was fat. But I'm telling you, it was also delicious.
Well,
the Silver Palette Cookbook is still going strong, and the anniversary edition has photographs in it, color photos, instead of my cute little drawings. But I'll tell you, everything was delicious in that, and everything is delicious in this book, equally as delicious. If you want 1 tablespoon of butter for flavor, great, but you really don't even need it.
I remember something that it was start with a pound of brie, some kind of summer pasta, and a pound of brie.
That's right. Linguine with tomatoes and basil.
Yeah, right.
And brie. But yeah. And that had a cup of olive oil in it. And my children love to make that recipe because it's so easy and so delicious. But now, if you put 1/4 cup of extra virgin olive oil in that, it's just fine. And if you just sprinkle a little cheese in it, it's fine. You can even use a basil dolce in that, and it's fabulous as well.
When you opened your little takeout shop there, and then the cook,
77, July 77.
Yeah, and the cook, that was the summer of the great blackout in New York. People of a certain age will remember that. And then the cookbook a couple years later. What were you setting out to do? Did you have a grand plan, Sheila?
Well, you know, we really thought, I was so nervous about that cookbook because I thought, it would put our store out of business because I thought if everyone knew how to make the food, they'd never buy the food from our store.
What's the point of trotting down there?
Well, there you go. And I'm telling you, we kept selling out every night. And since I was in the kitchen cooking the food, I was like weeping every morning. Oh, no, I have to make that ratatouille again. all the things, salmon mousse and ratatouille were killers to make, but everyone loved it anyway. So they bought it and they made it.
But as in all times,
it was like a double-edged sword.
Yeah, but we already had a pile of cookbooks. I mean, there was Betty Crocker, there was Julia Childs, and no doubt even then a million others. What did you see yourself setting out to do that might set yours apart?
Well, this was fun food. We made it fun to cook, fun to go in the kitchen. It was kind of culty, I guess, People loved that book, and they loved the new one with the photographs. Ah, that's what the food looks like.
Was it a different? Were you rejecting Julia Childs? Were you carving out new territory?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No. This was not competitive. It was not done purposefully. Certainly, Julia and I had never done a cookbook before. I mean, we had never done a store before.
This is Julie Rosso, co-author.
I have my degree in art education from NYU. I'm an art teacher.
How'd you learn to cook?
I know, but I got married.
Oh.
Now I'm not married, but I was married, and I cooked dinner every single night. So I'm self-taught.
So marriage is the thing that pushed you into the kitchen?
That's right.
Does it still? Is that what?
No, I'm not married any longer.
But
I cook every day. I'm still food editor of Parade 25 years. I mean, it's so much. It's fun. I love to cook.
So what are you up to in your new cookbook?
That's why I did this book. This is my seventh book.
Yeah, 10, all the foods we love and 10 recipes for each.
Well,
seems kind of arbitrary, Sheila.
It is a great idea. Okay? We all have foods we crave and all have foods that, you know, we rate a perfect 10. I mean, they're classic foods. They're seasonal foods. We have passions for food. Our craves are steaks and lobsters. Or the classics are soups, large important roasts that we all have to make on special occasion. There are seasonal foods. We can't wait to bite into that perfect tomato or eat, you know, silver queen corn. And then their passions like chocolates and ribs and ice creams, our favorite brands, which everybody has, are the ones we make at home. And so I thought what I was out with my editor and my publisher, and we thought, what about a birthday? It's my publisher's birthday.
Oh, good for that. Good for them.
We're going on a sale. Anyway, we thought, what about a book? And we call it 10. And we thought, 10, then we have to explain what it is. All the foods.
10, because it's the 10 things you crave and then 10 ways of doing
10 recipes for each.
Give us some examples.
10 perfect recipes for each. So this book has 32 chapters. There are 32 different foods or food concepts and then 10 recipes for each. 10 recipes in each chapter.
And you start out with cocktails, so you're loosening everything up for the main course.
Well, you know, everybody likes to have a drink. But say, for Sunday meats, which is one chapter, we have Chinese-style braised pork, shoulder with preserved kumquats. We have Sunday briskets. We have braised ossobuco on saffron orzo. We have gremolata with that. We have Emma's short ribs. We have pot roast paprikas, blue ribbon chili, Filipino pork adobo, chakrut garni, etc.
Oh, let me ask you about that, because I saw preserved kumquats in there for Sunday evening, and I thought...
Weren't that easy to make, but I made them.
Well, but why preserved kumquats? Do you have a reputation to keep here? Sheila has to take us into terra incognita, or she's not really doing the silver palette thing?
Who?
You. I mean, I don't know if I've ever eaten a preserved kumquat.
Oh, I don't. We sold the silver palette in 88, but I thought you can buy a jar of preserved kumquats, but if I'm going to make this pork dish, this braised shoulder of pork and add preserved kumquats to it, you can either buy a jar, but I should do a recipe for them also.
But is that your thing? I mean, you say what you really brought in the silver palette was bringing familiar ingredients together in new ways. I don't know if preserved kumquats fits
exactly. That's right. Familiar
exactly.
ingredients in unusual combinations.
Do Americans still
true.
Go for that?
I do it in here, too.
Well, but have we all eaten everything at this point, preserved kumquats aside? I mean, the supermarkets
are
jammed.
No. Look, I did a baked fresh ham in my large important roast, and I did it with a mojo sauce. Which is a ubiquitous Hispanic table sauce. And it is so delicious. First, I make the mojo sauce. I make enough to serve it with. And I make enough to baste it with and cook it with. It is so delicious.
Sheila, you call it ubiquitous, but I'm guessing that 25 years ago or 6 or 7 when the Silver Palette first came out, mojo sauce was not ubiquitous.
No, but it is in Hispanic countries.
Mm-hmm. And now, have you been able to expand the palette you're offering because supermarkets have so many more? more offerings on their shelves?
Oh, I don't make them and sell them anymore. Actually, I wish I had a manufacturer, because my barbecue sauce in this book is so delicious. I have a section on ribs, barbecue ribs and sauces. So don't I wish I could manufacture again?
Yeah, but even without manufacturing, you're giving recipes that people are going to have to act on, and I'm guessing that they've got a lot more options for what they can pick up at the store these days than they did in
1982. Well, certain things, but they'd want to make my raucous barbecue sauce because it's so yummy, and then they can freeze it.
What's so yummy about your raucous barbecue sauce?
Oh, it's so delicious. It's a Texas-style sauce. Well, I'll tell you why I say it's yummy. First of all, it is. And my products were always delicious. My products were always the best. And believe me, I've bought some of those sauces out there. They're yucky, and I've thrown them out.
We scarcely know how to disagree. What's your secret ingredient in raucous barbecue sauce?
It's so delicious. It's a Texas style. It has apple cider. I mean, I don't have my whole recipe in front of me. Do you have my book?
Yes, I do.
Open it to raucous barbecue sauce and tell the people what it is.
Tell the people.
I didn't bring my book with me.
All right, well, I don't know if I can get to raucous barbecue just that
you
quickly.
You can.
I'm lost.
Look in the index.
All right, I'm lost
it's
in
really
Saigon
fabulous.
Shrimp and... gray sole with the gremolata butter. But we'll come back.
Isn't that a great idea?
Yeah, yes,
because I thought the ingredients in gremolata, which sprinkles on the top of my ossobuco, which is lemon zest.
We're completely charmed. We'll come back and get right on top of it. Sheila Lukens is with us, Silver Palette fame. Her new book is 10. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Lukens is food editor for Parade magazine now. She joins us from New York. And yes, Sheila, I found Sheila's raucous barbecue sauce. And it's got Tabasco and cumin and chili, dark brown sugar, of course, and honey and cider vinegar, as you say. And off we go. But you say nothing's yummier, you write, coming into this, than baby back, that is ribs. Baby backs slathered with rich, tangy, brick-colored Texas-style sauce. Baby back ribs, do those still pass the arteriosclerosis test?
They're fine. They're fine. Or you can use St. Louis ribs, too, the bigger ones.
Make them big, make them small. They're yummy. Catherine's calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Catherine, you're on the air with Sheila Lukens.
Hi,
hello,
Catherine.
Hi. Hello, Sheila. Hello, Tom. I'm a huge fan of you both.
Okay.
So, thanks.
I must say that, Sheila, when in the late 80s, when I was a young professional and I had a roommate who could really cook really well, she made your raspberry chicken and other wonderful dishes out of the silver palette. And it just got me totally hooked, and I've used your books faithfully for the last 20 years. I'm now a mother of three boys, and we host big holiday dinners, and I always go to your cookbooks first.
Fantastic.
Out of all the ones I have. And just seasonally, as you and Tom were talking earlier about the just the basic simple ingredients, your fettuccine, brie, basil, tomato, olive oil, wonderful dish we always have for 4th of July. It's a total tradition, and we love your recipes, and I can't wait to get your new book.
Oh, thank you so much. And let me tell you, if you host big holiday dinner, there are 10 wonderful recipes for large, important roasts.
Oh, wonderful. I would love to have new ones, because I go through your books, and every year we do a different one. So that'll
great.
Be wonderful.
There's a crown roast of lamb stuffed with bright green tabbouleh.
Oh, lovely.
Yummy.
Now, is it really lovely? Are you ready for that, Catherine?
I think we are.
Bright green tabbouleh?
Well, it's delicious.
you've come a long way, baby. We all have, I guess.
Catherine, I was noticing, I was looking through all these recipes and also listening to a show on our PBS station the other night, mm-hmm. and the face of America is so different now, and mm-hmm. all these recipes, I mean, it's really a melting pot these days.
Uh-huh.
And all these recipes reflect it. I have... you know, Asian-inspired recipes, Greek-inspired recipes. I was just the first recipe. I have a roasted leg of lamb rubbed with lemon zest, chili, cumin, and ginger. I mean, there's so many different, ethnic ingredients in that, different...
It's great. We're all getting hungry. Catherine, among those 100, you've got the silver palette. It sounds maybe... right up front. And thanks for calling with that. My producer...
Thank you for being so nice.
My producer, Julie Jopp, has got your Asian-scented orange chicken fixing up at home, maybe marinating overnight. She says it's going to be the new chicken marbella, the prunes
and capers
that came out of...
I think she's right. It is so delicious. I myself made it the other day, and it is so delicious.
So talk about ethnic, but then, I mean, is anything off limits these days? Are Americans ready to sort of subsume everything into their cuisine?
No, it can be anything. In my roasted chicken, I have that. I have a Vietnamese-influenced chicken, a tandoori-style chicken. I have, you know, everything now. Things are so different.
Is American cooking then world cooking? Is it really come to that?
American cooking takes its cues from our new melting pot, which is a little bit of everything. It's Greek. It's Asian. It's South American. It's all kinds of Asian. It's Middle Eastern. It's everything.
You can,
because those are all the people I know. I go pick my granddaughter up at school. There is every type of child in her class, and it's so wonderful, and it's so exciting to see.
Every type of palate.
America is no longer white bread.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it's very, very exciting, and I think it's so wonderful and so enriching.
Rustic rigatoni, of course, that's been around a while, but you've got curried couscous right here, and we're right on down. Jalapeno cornbread, we're right on down the path. I should say at our website,
OnPoint
Radio.
We have all kinds of American in here. I mean, you know, regional American.
Yeah, as well. You can see a couple of recipes for a carrot ginger soup and buffalo shrimp at our website, onpointradio.org, from Sheila Lukin's new cookbook, 10. Tyler's calling from Boston. Tyler, you're on the air with Sheila.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tyler.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
Fine, thank you.
Hi, I'm a culinary student myself, and, well, I guess just I am, and I've cooked for a long time, and I just thought it's very interesting, and it's just to your point that America's really come a long way in a different way, that you see all these grains, you see couscous and quinoa and, you know, all this new grains. And it's even interesting, I think this is the stamp of approval, is when you see that Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts, when you see whole grains and turkey bacon and all these things, I think America's really in a new vogue where it's...
I think so, too.
You know, that this healthy wave of really good food and really healthy with different styles, it's very interesting, and it's great. I mean, I love it, and I see it firsthand.
Tyler, you're a student, a culinary student, so is the Silver Palette Cookbook and Sheila Lukin's on your shelf at school, or do they reference her?
Yeah, and we used at, I went to Johnson & Wales University in Providence, Rhode Island.
Uh-huh,
and,
great.
We used their main cookbook, but then also you're enriched with all cookbooks. So I did the Silver Palette. I was enriched with, and I love it. I love that style. The using chicken, like something plain like chicken, you can do so much with it, and I think that opens the American to so many different avenues when you introduce some Asian or some Middle Eastern influence.
Tyler, we love it, and thanks for calling. Sheila, he mentioned, is it quinoa?
Quinoa.
Tell us about it. I haven't cooked it. You've got something here with
chimichurri
herbs.
I have a whole section on grains. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do, and they're wonderful. I have 10 grains. I have tabbouleh. I have farro, as a matter of fact, which is a great Italian grain. I have risotto here. I have couscous. I have quinoa, as I said.
South American. Mm-hmm.
I have wheat berries.
Put it right up there, some quinoa with hanger steaks or strip steaks, you say. Let's go to Wes in Fort Myers, Florida. Hi, Wes. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I just am wondering.
Hi, Wes.
How are you?
Good. What do you know?
Thank you. How are you?
Good to talk to you. I'm fine, but I'd like to know, when Oprah has a book for sale pushes a book, the sales go up all the time. Now,
don't I wish?
On NPR, how are you an aunt for somebody there, or how did you get on the air here to push a book on National Public Radio.
Well, I can tell you,
I'm very honored to be on this show.
I can tell you, Wes.
Well, with the increase in all the books you're going to be selling now, are you still going to be groveling for money twice or three times a year?
Well, I'm going to give him some money before I leave.
I can tell you, Wes, when you go out and make the kind of mark that Sheila Lukens and Julie Russo did with the Silver Palette, people pay attention for a long time after. Out of that little place on the Upper West Side, millions of cookbooks sold, and a big mark on a lot of kitchens paying attention. Let's get another from Florence, South Carolina. Scott, you're on the air. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know?
Yes, I was going to ask your guest. I've heard the comment about the white bread, but I'm in Florence, South Carolina, and does she have any dishes that are Southern inspired?
I have grits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do have a brine roasted chicken.
I live in a section of South Carolina where country kitchens, and then if you go into more urban areas, soul food restaurants are big. But I can remember my grandmother, fixing a big pork roast with cornbread fritters, sliced cucumbers and tomatoes on the table, and man, I really miss that stuff. And I was wondering if you had anything like that.
I did do a 500-page book called The USA Cookbook, and I have tons of Southern food in that.
We got here a fluffy grit souffle. I don't know if that's what you're looking for, Scott.
It's delicious, and I have lots of barbecue.
Half cup of stone ground grits, 4 large eggs, a fourth cup of freshly grated Parmesan, 2 dashes Tabasco sauce, salt and pepper, and we're off to the races with fluffy grits souffle. Let's get a call from Providence, Rhode Island, and Ellen. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air with Sheila Lukens.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And I know this isn't common, but I want to say hello to my old friend Sheila Lukens. Sheila,
who is this?
Brown.
Hi, Helen.
It's great to, wonderful that you're coming out with this book. And
Thank you. As
you know, another cookbook author, I really wanted to ask Sheila where she sees the balance heading between, sort of trimming the fat and health and vibrancy and flavor for the next,
Well, I think we have so much flavor these days. I mean, let's face it, the big spice companies, McCormick, comes out with great new spices every other month. Their smoked paprika is spectacular. I mean, you don't even have to add liquid smoke to barbecue sauce anymore. You can add some smoked paprika in with your spices. They're coming out with black sesame seeds. I mean, you can buy these things on your supermarket shelves. And look at all the fresh herbs you can get all year round. You barely need any fat. You can use a little bit of olive oil. The spices and the flavorings you can add with just some spices and all the fresh herbs you have available all year round from your ordinary supermarkets. And I don't mean ordinary at that they're ordinary. Any neighborhood supermarket is selling these items all the time. Because of Parade magazine, I am always keeping up with the supermarkets, several of them in different neighborhoods, to be sure that anything I write for Parade is available. Anything in my book you can buy in supermarkets these days.
Sheila, let me ask you about your...
My readers.
Sure. Let me ask about your sense of the American palate, though, and how far it's weaned off of that. I mean, for years and years and years...
It was
fat and oil that had a lot to do with what we found satisfying.
Well, I think years ago, people got so scared about their cholesterol, and there are so many ads on television for cancer... And for cholesterol, believe me, I stopped smoking a long time ago. I was ill and I had to stop smoking, but believe me, I wish I had stopped smoking years before, but I haven't smoked in 12 years.
But on the food front, can we push away from the table satisfied without it?
And nobody wants to get cholesterol illnesses. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are scared of that. When it has to do with their health, I'm telling you, they find a lot of ways to flavors, between... the different, certainly an extra virgin olive oil, a little of that, and the different flavor vinegars you can use, and the different flavor citrus zests you can use. I mean, every week there's another great zester out. You can add another citrus zest to your food, a little splash of a different flavor of vinegar. Mm. There's so many ways you can flavor your food. You don't need fat.
Well, I'm definitely on that wagon. Let's go to Danville, New Hampshire, and Michelle. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Sheila.
Hi there.
I enjoy cooking gourmet healthy meals, so this is a nice segue from your last caller and your answer. I'm finding it more and more difficult to be able to afford the ingredients to make these wonderful foods, and I was wondering how economical the recipes are in your book.
Okay, you know what? I did an article for Parade last month, How to Feed Dinner to a Family of Four on $25.
Can you
and
do
I'll
it?
Be very honest, I just about pulled my eyelashes out trying to do it. It's very difficult now. Price is up, and look at the state of our economy, so it's not so easy.
But you did manage
but
to pull it I off,
did
I saw
it.
That.
I did it. But I went to about five supermarkets to try to find the best prices. And it's hard. It really is hard. These recipes, there's only one recipe that I can say. There's no foie gras in this book. None. There's one recipe. It's totally delicious. It's not my recipe, but it's Jeremiah Towers, who's a great older chef. Well, we all got older. But he used to cook in San Francisco. He had a recipe of stars, which is a black truffle hamburger. But you don't have to make that. Not all these recipes are that outrageously expensive. There are a lot of great pasta recipes. There are a lot of great chicken recipes. But you don't have to make the standing rib roast. But, you know, things are expensive in the stores, but there are a lot of reasonable recipes. I have a lemon herb roast chicken legs recipe. You can get that in the supermarket. There are clams. I wouldn't do the lobster recipes, except maybe in the summer when they come down next summer. Otherwise, don't look at them.
Mm. I have to say, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Michelle, what do you find when you go to the supermarket? Can you cook the basics? Are you able to do, you know, just what you need for the family now.
That's right.
Yeah, well,
make a shopping list. Don't impulse shop. Just always make a shopping list and buy what you have on that list. Don't impulse shop at all. I don't know. It's expensive. You're absolutely right.
What do you say, Michelle?
Fruits and vegetables are absolutely outrageous.
They are. You have to buy what's in season. That's what I would suggest. There's some great noodle dishes in this book. There's some very nice grain dishes, which are not too expensive. I mean, beans and legumes, there's some great dishes. Wait for the corn to buy the corn, you know, wait till the summer. And asparagus, too.
Sounds like bean days to me. What do you say, Michelle?
We're fortunate up here because lobster is $4.99 a pound now. This is cheaper than meat. So I mean,
well, then try to sneak in some of those dishes. Now you have to buy in season and you have to shop wisely. And I can't stress enough: make a shopping list and only stick to that list.
Michelle, thank you very much for calling. They're from New Hampshire. Sheila Lukens is with us, co-author of The Silver Palette, way back when, a lot of cookbooks since then, and now out with 10 All the Foods We Love and 10 Recipes for Each. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Sheila Lukens joins us from New York, and right now Kate is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Kate. You're on the air with Sheila.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm on my cellular phone, so it's a little difficult to hear you. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to hearken back to the discussion about fat, and I wanted to know if you are familiar with the work of Weston Price, who was a dentist in the 30s who drew the connection between nutrition and physical degeneration, and also who fueled the work of Sally Fallon, the author of Nourishing Traditions, which is a cookbook.
Not really, no, I'll be honest, no.
Well, it's really interesting stuff, and I'll tell you, I use that as a basis for all my cooking now.
And does it mean you can use fat or don't use fat, Kate?
I use so much fat. I'm 52. I weigh 142 pounds, and I eat lots and lots of butter. I make sure that I got a good balance of high-quality animal fat.
Sounds like an Atkins diet. Is that what you're getting at?
No, not at all. No, because the diet that I eat, it really stresses whole foods, real foods, the way that foods are prepared, especially grains and nuts and legumes, which need to be soaked to actually access the vitamins and minerals. And that's one of the really important roles of good quality fats, whether they're animal-based or whether they're vegetable-based. But animal-based are actually healthier, that we've found, because this whole like cholesterol thing that has been created by the vegetable oil industry, when in fact, you know, we have actually come up through generations and generations and generations on the healthy fats of animals.
Kate, like, I'm glad it's working for you. Sheila, how about it? And how do you deal in an era when people, you know, are so dialed in to their own take on how they're going to eat and take care of their bodies? Kate's got a whole theory of the case here. Are people always bringing those to your recipes?
I think it's very individual, and you have to do what you think is right for yourself. And frankly, I do what my doctor tells me to do. And I'm very careful about fat. I do, because I had a big cholesterol problem.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm very small and don't weigh very much. You know, I'm like 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I did have a cholesterol problem, and I don't any longer. But I did have to listen to my doctor, and I do take medication.
Have you torn some pages out of your first cookbook, or are there some you just don't go back to?
No, I don't cook with fat anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I cook with basically olive oil, and someone said to me, this could be a health food book. And that's the way my last several books have been, because I've been very cautious about it. Because, frankly, I don't want to have a stroke.
Hey, nobody can blame you there. Let's go to Fitchburg, Massachusetts, and William. Hi, William. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Big fan of your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say, with regard to a point made earlier about sort of hunkering down in the kitchen in these tough economic times, my wife is Vietnamese, and we have chosen to really sort of go whole hog into the her mom's old recipes, because, you know, you can get all the ingredients at the Asian market, and you'd be hard-pressed to spend $60 down there, and you can feed an army with that stuff. It's great. And
I bet it's fabulous.
It's fantastic. In fact, we have now gotten to the point where we can't get invited to a single holiday event of any kind without them begging for pot stickers. Doesn't matter what the occasion is.
My
it's been
favorite.
Working out great for us.
You know, William, I guess you're lucky. It seems to me Vietnamese is one of those lowest on fat and oil and highest on flavor. You're in a good zone there.
Yep,
very, very delicious.
You've got a couple right here in the book, Sheila, Vietnamese-style chicken from the Cooper
family.
Yes,
my friends gave me this recipe, and it's very delicious.
And grilled Saigon shrimp. I'm trying to look at what
also
makes it Saigon.
Yes,
lemongrass,
they're,
I guess.
They're marinated and briefly and then grilled, and they're so delicious.
Asian fish sauce here, a little, olive oil? Olive oil? In Vietnamese food? I guess.
Well, that's this guy's shrimp, and he's a chef. But anyway, the shrimp are delicious.
Yeah, Vietnamese food. Two thumbs up. Thanks for calling, William. Leah's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Leah. You're on the air.
Hey. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a comment referring to a lot of the topics that have been brought up. I'm a yoga teacher here in Nashville, and I'm very aware of taking care of your health from a holistic perspective. And one of the ways that is most important, of course, is by the food that you put in your mouth. So not only am I a member of a CSA, but I'm also a volunteer.
A CSA? What's that, Leah? CSA, what's that?
It stands for Community Supported Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
wherein individual families are members of a farm that's usually within about 100 miles of where you live, and they make deliveries to those families, and you get a bushel, or depending on your share size, of fresh vegetables picked usually even that day, delivered to you for a minimal fee, and it's our CSA, I'm a member of Long Hungry Creek Farms, which is the Barefoot Farmer, and it's about $15 a week.
Has it changed the way? Has it changed the way you cook?
Incredible. And, well, it has, because you get delivered these vegetables. Of course, depending on your CSA, for us, we just get whatever they have on the farm that's fresh that day. So you may get parsnips. Mm-hmm. You'll get sorrel. You'll get these different vegetables that perhaps you don't see as often in your grocer. And I've noticed a lot of people who have turned to this CSA because they've heard about it in the news, heard about organic farming and all the positive benefits it can have as anti-cancer, anti-stress reducer, et cetera. And now they're cooking more because they're using these vegetables and looking for recipes and asking about cookbooks. And, of course, I will pass on your new cookbook. It sounds in line.
You can go use your parsnips in one of my soups. It's a roasted carrot ginger soup, and it has carrots and parsnips, and it's so spectacular. Because you know when you roast these vegetables and the caramelization is great and the ginger makes it so fabulous, you will love it.
I guess when you get the vegetables by the bushel, you better be ready to do some good
cooking. You
better
be ready to roast.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, several members have invested in deep freezers where they're freezing some of their greens because
Oh, nice. That's great.
Leah, thanks very much for calling.
That is so nice. That's a nice story.
We love it. Sheila, what about the locally grown movement, the organic movement? Are those affecting the recipes that you're putting out the way you're thinking about American cuisine?
No, they aren't. Well, I love the farmers markets and everything. Sure, they're fabulous. But when I have to do 400 recipes, I'll be very honest with you, I love all that, and I support it, and I think it's wonderful. But when I'm writing a cookbook, and that is not the thrust of my cookbook, but, you know, I'm just doing recipes, and I go to my supermarket and buy the vegetables and buy the food, and I'm doing the recipes. You understand that?
Yeah. Do you keep up with all the big debates over food policy in this country? Michael Pollan and these, many people who are now looking at what we subsidize, what we grow, American food policy. Is that part of what you think about, or you're in the music of the recipes and never mind?
I don't like to put it never mind. No, I would hate to think that I would think never mind. Of course I know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But... I that's an interesting way to put it. I'm in the music of the recipes. I mean, I'm not out of it. I've been in this business for so long. Mm-hmm. Of course I'm not out of it. I read everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing this book and making the recipes, and I support a lot of people and a lot of groups. But I'm right now, I did this book. And I needed to get my recipes done and wanted to get my recipes done. And I believe in sustainable agriculture and all of that and sustainable dairying, etc. But no, I'm not out of it. But that is not how I did my shopping for the book.
When you're in the kitchen, you're cooking. Let's go to Jason in Chester, Vermont. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a big fan. My question is, how do you view food culture in America? Because Escoffier has said you can tell the culture of a nation by looking at its table. And I was just wondering how you thought about the American food culture compared with the rest of the world.
No, I think it's huge these days. And I think you can thank your farmers and your dairymen and your cheesemakers and your artisanal growers and producers and everything. I think American food is phenomenal these days and has a huge standing in the world. I think maybe years ago it didn't, but I think, you know, once Wolfgang Puck started, you know, asking Chino Farm to start growing vegetables for him, you had all these artisanal farmers starting to grow things, all these, you know, people raising, small people raising animals, beef, antelope, you know, all these great things in Texas, these great farmers, not farmers,
ranchers
people
there.
People raising all, yes, antelope, et cetera, lambs. It's phenomenal. The food business, our food is extraordinary. It's the highest quality. And all these fabulous artisanal cheesemakers from Indiana, from the Midwest, from all over the place.
Jason, what do you see? You're a chef. What do you think our food culture says about us?
Well, I was speaking specifically with the proliferation of the fast food culture that we seem to be stuck in, and now we're shipping it off to all corners of the globe as far as Kentucky Fried Chicken and the other fast food restaurants.
Well, let's all talk about that. I mean, that's just, they want it. Yes, we have a McDonald's, but they're dying for it, so that's their problem. It's not our fault. China is dying for it.
Jason,
they want it, let them have it.
It sounds like not your cup of tea, Jason, but off it goes. And Sheila Lucan says,
they want it, let them have it. It's not our problem. We have put beautiful food on the table in America. Look at our producers, our fine producers. Our food is great now. American food is something to be very, very proud of. That's a different category. They want it, let them have it.
Let's go to North Andover, Massachusetts. And Beth, hi Beth, you're on the air.
Hi Tom, hi Sheila.
Hi.
I just wanted to call to say that I have been using your cookbooks for the past 20 years. It was a very special location on my kitchen counter. And last Sunday for family dinner, we had the scalloped potatoes and pork chop casserole that's made with the cream and the mustard and the thyme. And my 10 and 12-year-old children loved it. They've been eating your pesto and your beef tenderloin recipes since they were old enough to eat.
Thank you very much.
I just want to thank you, and it's such an honor that I could call it.
Beth, if I'm not mistaken, you're practically in tears about these recipes.
What
takes you to that point here, Beth?
They are just family favorites, and I get very emotional when I talk about things that are near and dear to me and my family.
Wow.
Thank you so much. Well, you know what also happens, Tom, is that these recipes work. And the new ones will work, too. And I think that's so sweet that she enjoys them.
You got a family gathered right around your scalloped potatoes there. Thank you, Beth. Alberto's calling from North Andover, Massachusetts.
Alberto,
you're on the air.
Hi, Sheila. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good.
We're fine.
Hey, I just wanted to relay a story. I was married in 1985. It was a hot summer, August day. And we centered our reception dinner around the silver palette. And we had chilled, string beans and a raspberry vinaigrette, and chilled chicken salad. And the highlight and the thing that people still talk about today is the chilled blueberry soup.
Oh, that's such a nice thing to have. Oh, my goodness.
Chilled blueberry soup at a wedding in 1985, and you're still thinking about it.
How do you like that? But that's really something, huh?
Yeah,
thank you so much. But 1985, that is so modern. That is so modern for then, you know?
It was a big hit, and like I said, my relatives all over that's the highlight of our wedding anyway.
Thank you so much. And that is so modern for 1985. Oh my gosh. That's why people like that cookbook.
Alberto, thanks for calling. One more, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Alberto.
Lisa in Needham, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Lisa.
Hey Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment that the Silver Palette cookbook has been part of my life for also 25 years. Mm. And it's not just that the food is great and I can trust every single one of those recipes, but it's the notes in the margins, almost like liner notes, that it's a blueprint to not only cooking, but the whole experience of enjoying your friends and, the evening. It's just fabulous. Mm. And it gives you courage.
Oh, that's so nice. I could use a little courage now.
Lisa, that's good. Are you still writing liner notes with a lifestyle in mind, Sheila?
Well, I tell you, there wasn't that much room in this book for them. It's not that I didn't write them. But they've also been written for a lot of my other books, though. But yes, I wrote a ton of them. For my last book, Celebrate, yes, Setting the Scene, et cetera, et cetera.
Lemon dill, yes. Parsnip mash, you say here. And okay, who still thinks of parsnips as some fuddy-duddy vegetable that's straight out of
They're
Charles
not.
Dickens?
They're not. They're larder vegetables, but they are so delicious, and I bet you could pick them up at not too much money.
You say you've taken a winter vegetable and segued right into spring.
They are easier to mash than potatoes. Much easier and quicker. 1, 2, 3, and just cook them in with a little bit, you know, a chicken bouillon or something, or cook them in a little chicken broth.
Parsnip.
They're so delicious.
And off you go. Sheila Lukens, co-author of The Silver Palette all those years ago, now out with 10, joining us today from New York. It's been a big career and a long one, and I'm sure you're going to have people right on to your new batch of recipes. Thank you very much for joining us today, Sheila.
Oh, this has been so great. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.